Weight belts, belly breathing, pressure management, shape change.
Sweet.
All of that and more on this week's episode of
Welcome to Reconsider. I'm Bill Hartman. This is the podcast to challenge you to ask better questions, to look beyond traditional models of thinking, and arrive at better health and fitness solutions.
And this would be cute. This would be where like the music comes in. Maybe I'll actually cut the intro in right there. That's what I'm going to do with my fantastic
Sweet.
Editing skills.
Your amazing editing skills. Yes.
So on the UHP Network, Bill put out an article pretty heavy into like spheres and cylinders and hoop stress and strain and pressure management and all this stuff. The initial thought was Bill was going to write an article about weight belts and belly breathing, but it kind of went down the road of like,
it did not, it was
it got exactly, a little more technical than I think people might've been expecting, but
because,
that's not
because
a bad
my
thing.
My expectations of the people that are on the network is that they are more well-formed than many others, right? Like that's why they're there. They're looking for something that's a little bit more in depth and a little bit deeper in understanding.
Right.
And so it stands to reason. It's like, and you know, I always default to the cook and the chef thing. It's like we got a bunch of chefs on the network. And if the cooks want to just say, well, are weight belts good? And it's like, yes, no. Okay. Then that's fine. But our guys don't want to do that. Right. They want a deeper level of understanding. And so that's what the article was about. Right.
Right.
But
let's see.
But yeah, we can talk about it and probably refine our understanding further.
Right. So this conversation will be more about like why this stuff matters, why understanding what happens when you take a sphere and turn it into a cylinder, what a human body is really just a cylinder. It's really cylindrical.
There's consequences to wearing a weight belt. There's consequences to strategies and things like that versus just this blanket thing of like a weight belt is good for X. But what about the negative secondary consequences? We can get into that. But if we understand just a little bit about how this thing works, it's like it makes it a whole lot easier to understand. And then we can be a little bit more selective with their strategic use of such things like a belt, if we even need one.
Yeah. So on the continuum of stretching something or compressing something, expansion and compression, we're talking about weight belts being on one end and then belly breathing being like the other end of that.
Yeah, belly breathing would be a representation of the consequences of our cylindrical structure and then how the tension is demonstrated based on the internal pressures, right? And it is a strategy, but it is representative of one of the negative secondary consequences associated with a cylindrical structure that we do have.
Right.
Right.
So being of a cylindrical structure, belly breathing can become a path of least resistance just based on the pressure dynamics of a cylindrical system.
Correct.
Okay. Correct. And then when we add, if we were to say that's the one end of this thing, and then we were to add this compressive, non-movable leather belt, or it doesn't have the same ability to yield as other connective tissues
Correct.
Might. So you have this like hard belt around someone's midsection. Yes. What are some of the implications of using something like that?
Using the belt?
Yeah. Friend, we can talk about narrow when it's useful and when it's not useful.
Yeah,
and we'll give examples.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So we need to understand a little bit about what hoop tension is. So when you create a cylinder, there is pressure that goes to the top and the bottom of the cylinder, and there's pressure out into the walls. And so if you think about like increasing the pressure inside of an aluminum can to where it would explode, the pressure that would cause the explosion through the sides of the can would be what we would call hoop tension. And so when you see somebody belly breathe and you see this like focal expansion of the abdomen relative to the thorax, that is taking advantage of the constraint or lack of constraint in the abdomen itself. And it's like that hoop tension is winning that strategy, right? Left to its own devices, it would continue to expand in that direction. Obviously, you're going to hit a constraint where the tissues are going to have their maximum adaptability. And hopefully you don't go past that. But going past that would be stuff like umbilical hernias. You'll see the linea alba spread apart. You'll see inguinal hernias, things like that. Like those are the unfortunate consequences of this pressure inside your body and then the resultant hoop tension. So what the belt then does is it becomes an additional constraint to the hoop tension. And so the hoop tension would be pushing outward on all sides of this cylinder. The belt creates the resistance. And so what has to happen is that the pressure from internally has to increase upward and downward. This is one of the reasons why you feel so much more stable when you do wear a weight belt effectively in a heavy exercise. So let's just say you're doing heavy back squats for the day and you get up to your heaviest possible weight and it seems like crazy heavy on you. You put the weight belt on, you've actually increased the internal pressure. When you compress the air volume and then the fluid volume of your abdomen in this circumstance, we now have an increase in the internal pressure. You're structurally more stable. So you can actually load more weight on that structure than you could have before. And so it's much less effortful. And so then you can apply more force in that circumstance, which means in this case, I can do more reps or I can lift more weight. In that case. And so that would be the beneficial side of the weight belt, load on structure aside, right? So from a performance perspective, it does give us a mechanical advantage because the amount of pressure that we can produce, the shape that we would have available to us is a higher force producing shape.
Right. So, okay. And that would be like some of the potential benefits of using a weight belt. But I think that a lot of people just see the weight belt as something that would benefit everyone.
Right.
And they don't understand where some of the negative secondary consequences could be. So maybe we talk a bit about that.
Yeah. So understand that the constraint of the weight belt is only within the range that the weight belt is applied. So let's just say we've got a 4-inch leather weight belt. We put it around somebody's waist, just above the pelvis. That would be the area of constraint. As we constrain the abdomen, the hoop tension pushes out, the belt creates a constraint, pressure goes up and down, much more stable. That's an assumption that we get this sort of equivalent increase in pressure upward and downward. The problem that we run into because of structures, because of compensatory strategy and other structural biases like the axial configurations create problems where there may be a pre-existing top-down pressure gradient, meaning there's more pressure at the top of the axial skeleton than there is being produced at the bottom of the axial skeleton. That's where we run into a little bit of a pickle because even though we have this external constraint that may increase the pressure upward and downward, if the pressure downward is maintained and it's below the constraint of the weight belt, there is actually greater expansion in that direction. And so what happens is that suddenly things feel heavier than they did before. If we were to use like, say, jumping into the air as an example, you would be stealing the capacity to overcome gravity because your expansion bias, the universal principle is we'll move in the direction of expansion. The expansion bias is inferior to the weight belt. Therefore, it'll stick you to the ground. It'll make your weights feel heavier and it'll steal repetitions. Now, it's not going to happen in everybody. But again, it's like if I have a configuration where, say, the diameter of the thorax at the superior aspect of the thorax is smaller than it is at the bottom, or I have an internal bias in the pelvis of the same design, then the weight belt can actually be a negative consequence. It'll actually not benefit me, right? If I was, say, a narrow helical archetype that has numerous compensatory strategies represented, it will create the same top-down pressure gradient. And under that circumstance, I may not get enough pressure to come back up to benefit from the weight belt. So those would be the two big situations where you would have the negative secondary consequence of the increased pressure from the belt.
Yeah. So if your body is a tube of toothpaste and your structure or muscle compression is creating this sort of top-down gradient where I push the toothpaste down to the bottom of the tube, and then I throw a belt or I grab the middle of the tube, it's not going to evenly distribute that pressure and that volume. It's going to shove it down into the bottom of the tube even harder and staple that person to the floor. So you could potentially test this with like a jump mat or something if you wanted to know. Mm-hmm. you could see the before and after. Also, like, I keep thinking of, like, you know, hearing horror stories of bodybuilders wearing weight belts doing squat workouts where they blow their butt out. You know, it's like,
yes, the prolapse.
The prolapse. Like, well,
that's a pressure related representation that we're talking about. It's like, and it doesn't happen a lot, thankfully.
Right, right.
You only need to see it on the internet once and you go, oh, yeah,
terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but people experience these pressure related phenomena naturally. Like I said, an inguinal hernia, umbilical hernias, you see the linea alba getting ripped apart.
Yeah, the diastasis.
Diastasis recti. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like, so, and you think about it, like, you know, and I mentioned this in the article about like the concept of a beer belly, like there's a reason where the adiposity goes in that direction, because it is the path of least resistance.
Yeah. Right? My grandfather was very skinny. He had a gigantic, so thinking back to, like, you know, hugging him and playing with him when I was little, he's since passed, but his rib cage, and it was so bony and rigid, and then his belly was like hard. You could knock on it and it sounded like wood. And that was just like the stuff going down with no ability to come back up. And it was just very like, he was old. He was in his 80s. This is the only path of least resistance for him. It's the only way he could breathe. Right. That and the tremendous amount of smoking that he did with, which I think was just his way to try to breathe somehow, like, get more air, whatever. So, like, those are, thinking about it from this perspective of, like, belly breathing is not going to help your issue because of the pressure and volume relationship. It's the physics of it that we're talking about here, and and thinking about things from a perspective of negative secondary consequences. Everyone shouldn't wear a weight belt that lifts weights or is trying to improve performance because of what we had just mentioned. You have to understand what you're looking at from somebody from a structural perspective, from a pressures and volumes perspective of the shape and the structure that they're showing you and the external strategies that they're showing you, and then understand what squeezing that person's midsection would do to the volume and the pressures in their body. Would it help improve their performance, or would it take away from that? Yeah. And then, you know, there are like instances where you are going to have people who have like a diastasis or some type of structural issue that might need some type of like compression in order to alleviate it. But you also have to be chasing the reclaiming of expansion in the upper thorax.
Something just kind of comes to mind, and I won't name names, but these would be like high level bodybuilders doing like crazy heavy squats on video that you can search on these things. You can see them. You can see how the weight belt is applied, and then you can see the hoop tension in the abdomen coming around the belt, both inferiorly and superiorly. You can see
that.
And then imagine just the fact that, you know, if you're expanding A to P in the abdomen under high pressure. So we talk about anterior posterior expansion being a good thing as far as like a thoracic and pelvic representation, because that would be representative of our extremity range of motion. But what we're talking about is like a focal abdominal expansion. Imagine the secondary consequences there. You got a thorax that doesn't have as much air in it. So there's a squeeze downward. And then you think about what is going to be the load on structure under those circumstances. So, you know, is this going to result in some constraint change in the spine itself? Is this going to result in constraint change in the hips itself, right? Because of the amount of load that is actually going in the undesired direction, right?
Right.
So we can create a lot of pressure, and we can push up against a lot of pressure very, very slowly. So one of the other consequences, you know, we're talking about like jumping and using it as an example, but when you see somebody that's still capable of lifting a weight, but they're grinding and it's going really, really slowly. The reason being is because there's so much pressure that's also going down that they're creating themselves in addition to them trying to push up and away from the ground. So what happens is the pressure goes down, it hits the constraint, and then they have to overcome that pressure as well. And so what that turns into is a slower lift.
Right.
So even though you might accomplish the lift, if it's done at such a slow rate, there may be no benefit from situations for an athlete where the impulse time is very, very brief. Like that force production actually might be detrimental.
Well, it's like all athletics basically require some type of impulse.
Yeah, because it's time constrained.
Yeah. So much of it is rapid and high velocity, requires a high velocity that would also require a rate of force to be there.
I have this much time to apply force, but if it takes me this much time to apply maximum force, I'm not even using that capability. And then it might teach me a strategy that would actually slow me down ultimately and reduce my force output.
Yeah. So I guess what we're asking people to reconsider just by the title of this episode is going to be the use of belly breathing and weight belts, and just not giving everyone one thing or the other, but understanding the consequences of using either. There aren't really many instances where I would cue someone to strictly breathe through their belly. It would be like more circumferential expansion, especially when it comes to the rib cage. I mean, I don't know if can you think of anything?
I wouldn't use it as a desired strategy.
Yeah, it'd be like a don't do this type of thing.
I would use it as a comparative strategy. Yes. So when you're teaching somebody to promote more of the thoracic expansion, you can actually teach them to bias, right? Mm. And then in doing so, it's sort of like taking them so far in the wrong direction, they go, now I get a sense of what's going on. And then they can actually sense the other thing more effectively. So it's like, you know, if you were going to teach somebody to, like, you just have them in supine and you're trying to show them how they're breathing, and you put one hand on the chest, one hand on the belly, and and you can create the differential and you can actually magnify that. They go, oh, now I actually recognize, because they don't, in many cases, people don't understand what they're
right.
doing.
Right. They're unconsciously incompetent. And that can help create that sort of learning journey for them. Mm-hmm. So that's a good example. I think also if the pendulum swung too hard in the opposite direction and you just have don't breathe in your belly at all, then you're going to create a lot of abdominal tension, maybe like a rectus strategy on somebody that you don't want to have, but just to try to force air to go up. So it's this balance. Having moderation being the key for most things. It's like, can you, your ability to like do both things and just expand everywhere and compress everywhere is more important. And then giving everyone a weight belt, like hopefully this sort of understanding it's going to provide you with the ability to understand why someone might not benefit from using a weight belt, why you might see a performance decrement from somebody, why somebody might be able to lift heavier all of a sudden, but it's very grindy as well.
Yeah.
And this conversation also makes me think about power lifters who rely very heavily on box squatting in their training, because it's just helping to reverse that pressure relationship. It's forcing stuff to have to hit the ground of the pelvic outlet and come back up.
Yeah. But it also gives you a representation of why the equipped lifters are capable of so much more load.
Right.
Same principle, we're using the same principle at the knee. If you're using knee reps, we're using the same principle in the pelvis. If you're using compression shorts or a lifting suit plus the belt, et cetera, like all of these things behave, using the same principles.
Right. Okay. What else was I going to mention? So going into this, we're reconsidering a couple of things. Also, it's like maybe we finish by talking about like what we can do about this pressure and volume relationship. Mm-hmm. Like what we would, if someone is training in such a way that it would require them to, for safety and longevity purposes, use a weight belt from time to time. Mm-hmm. We already talked about like a KPI being a vertical jump, but also what would we want to do to make sure that they can restore and maintain that sort of AP expansion while also training very heavy with the use of a tool like that?
Well, you always want to make sure that you're capable of accessing the middle propulsive strategies, which is an IR'd pelvis, the ability to absorb and produce energy through that range. So this is early internal rotation, which is a distal to proximal accumulation of internal rotation, and then the proximal to distal, which is the delivery of the force application. But we want to teach people to do so with a greater representation of internal rotation. So this is the challenge for the narrows, because they have a very small space to apply the internal rotation. It's very difficult for them to acquire the internally rotated positions at the extremes of the archetypical representation. So it is a bit more of a challenge for them. But it's also, again, from a reasoning standpoint, we have to be a little bit more selective as to what exercises we're selecting, whether we're going to use a strategy like an external constraint, like a weight belt. There are other constraints that we could use to help them emphasize internal rotation. And just as a point to make, I'm going to be posting a video for the UHP Plus members in the Purple Room that shows a technique to start to reinforce some of this internal rotation shape in the pelvis using some very simple exercises and simple cues.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, so it's like you don't want to rely on something to create, I mean, you don't want to have it be a crutch. You still want to have this person be able to accommodate these internally rotated shapes or these IR shapes. And then you want to make sure that after using it, you're not decreasing the performance or whatever the outcome of that person is looking for from a performance or health perspective. Okay.
What's our
I'm trying to think
topic du jour for those people that have made it all the way through the
what did we podcast? I can't even remember the things we've talked about at this point. Did we talk about comic book strips and the Sunday newspaper?
The Sunday newspapers?
Yeah.
I don't think we talked about Sunday newspapers.
I mean that was still a thing when I was little, but I'm pushing 40, so I guess I'm old now.
Well, see, that's where Silly Putty came in, because you could lift the pictures off the page because of the ink on your Silly Putty. That was one of the selling points of Silly Putty, in fact, was the Sunday comics, because they were in color and you had like Dad would get the big Sunday paper that was about yay thick, you know, and then and you'd always pull the comic section out. Yeah.
Right. The lifestyle section that had the word jumble in it. And then it had the crossword, and Sudoku came out.
Yeah.
I forgot when. But and then the big ones for me, I think, were, I mean, there was at one point in my life I wanted to be like a cartoonist because I liked comics.
I think everybody
so much.
Did, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, at least you and I. Yeah. And Calvin and Hobbes was big for me when it was gigantic. Still in the paper. Yeah. That was like my favorite.
Bill Watterson.
By far.
Bill Watterson?
Yeah.
Huge.
I did a book report on him what were they called? It was like a biographical report where we had like the presentations we had to give with,
You'd get like you'd get the color version of the Far Side.
Oh yeah. Far Side was great. I used to have all those books too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would lean in that direction. Like your standard was for decades was Peanuts, because that was always the first one on the first page. It was huge, obviously.
Marmaduke.
Marmaduke was a single frame. Family Circus was a single frame.
Yeah. What was the one that I never liked was always like the medieval one. It was like
a Wizard of Id?
No. It was like Sir something. It was like the royal.
It was drawn in the very classical cartoon.
I was always like boring. Well, if anyone knows what that is, post it in the comments, post your favorite Saturday or Sunday morning comic strip in the newspaper. Unless you don't even know what people are like, what's a newspaper?
They don't know what we're talking about. Kids today.
Yeah. I got enough gray in my beard to be in that party now, I think.
There you go.